Good morning. I am Commissioner Dick Marzano, Port of Tacoma President, calling to order the regular meeting of the Port of Tacoma Commission on March 17, 2026. The time is now 10 a.m. Also present are Commissioners Kristen Ang, Deanna Keller, John McCarthy, and J.T. Wilcox. We have a quorum. Our meeting is being held at the Fabulous Center and streamed live on the meeting page of the Port of Tacoma website at www.portoftacoma.com. The commission will now meet in executive session until 12 p.m. to discuss one potential litigation item under RCW 42.30.110(1)(i), two minimum price of real estate sale or lease items under RCW 42.30.110(1)(2), and one evaluation of a public employee under RCW 42.30.110(1)(g).
Thank you, Mr. President. For the record, Eric Johnson, Executive Director of the Port of Tacoma. The factors allowed to be discussed during executive session that relate to real estate are as follows: the size and zoning of the property, the distance from and connectivity to deep water marine terminals, the potential for job creation, and consistency with the port's strategic plan. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon. This is Commissioner President Dick Marzano. The time now is 12 o'clock. We were in executive session from 10 a.m. to 11:57 a.m. to discuss one potential litigation item, two minimum price of real estate sale or lease, and one evaluation of a public employee. So let's begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you all for being here today. We acknowledge that we are on the traditional homelands of the Puyallup tribe. The Puyallup people have lived on and stewarded these lands and continue to do so today. We consider the tribe to be our partners in many of the efforts we undertake. We would also like to recognize March 2026 as Women's History Month and March 8, 2026 as International Women's Day. Yes. Acknowledging the achievements and many contributions of women in our community, nation, world, and right beside me also. And also, I'd like to wish everybody a happy St. Patty's Day, John. McCarthy made sure I had to say that. So, everybody good. Okay, the first item on to approve today's agenda, we need to make a change in the order of today's agenda and move item 10A, the Blair Waterway Program update, to be heard just before commission action items. Could I have a call for a motion to approve moving item 10A, the Blair Waterway Program update, before commission actions?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Ang, second by Commissioner Keller. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And that carried. Thank you. Is there anybody here who would like to make any other changes to the agenda? Seeing none, today's agenda stands with that one change. Next, we have the Executive Director's report. So, Eric, turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the record, Eric Johnson, Executive Director of the Port of Tacoma. We've got a pretty big agenda today, so I'm going to move right through. But it is highlighted by a fairly deep dive into the Blair Waterway Program, which you're going to learn about from staff in a minute. It's a complicated program. It's one of our biggest capital investment projects that we have planned. You've been getting briefings from time to time, but today there's a big vote on an implementation agreement with the tribe. We want to make sure you've got all the pieces of that in your mind. So that's why we wanted to move the briefing up. In general announcements, the city is working on amending their critical areas ordinance, which is a land use statute that, or set of requirements that affects us quite a bit. And they're doing two things that we're working with their staff on, and we'll keep you posted on. One of them is they're developing a critical aquifer recharge area, which limits some types of uses that you can do within it. It encompasses most of the city, and for us, it encompasses the property in the Tide Flats west of the river, which is part of the, that's where our new building is going to be, for one thing. But we're working hard to make sure that those amendments don't conflict with the Tide Flats subarea plan that we all just got done working so hard on. And I'll be back to you with that. There's also some things on buffers that we're working on. Moving to our community outreach efforts, last week we had another one of our Ports and Popcorn series at the Grand Cinema, sold out as always. This time was Rod Kuhn giving a history of the Port of Tacoma. Everyone loves that piece. The next one is April 2nd, and the speaker will be somebody from Tote Maritime talking about Tote's operations in Alaska, so look forward to that. And then finally, some really good news on the social media front. We had over 150, almost 150,000 people view our State of the Port report online, and almost 250,000 people viewed our Monkey Shines post on Facebook. And I'm amazed by those numbers. I think it just shows that there's a huge appetite for learning about the port out there in the community. So when we put those things out, people watch them. And I just wanted to close with that and compliment our communications team, who's done an incredible job with our social media profiles, and I'm pretty proud of them. So that's the end of my report.
Okay, thank you, Eric. And I agree, I think we all agree with the response we've received from the public about not only the state of the port, but the Monkey Shine things. Pardon me. Okay, next on the agenda is a public comment. We will now invite public comment. As a reminder, comment time is limited to 3 minutes in person pursuant to RCW 42.56. Recorded public comments and public meeting sign-in sheets. We do have one name, that's Dax. Oh, hi, Dax.
Dax Coho, Local 22. I'm going to try and stumble through this. Has to do with memorializing a name on the new port admin building. And I've been told that I made the short list on of a couple of supply closets. But in all seriousness, 7 years ago, the commission recognized an individual who is dear to my heart, Jim Norton. And that name, excuse me, he was a titan. He taught me how to behave at the bargaining table. He taught me how to have the guts to come up and speak, even though I do not want to be doing this at all. But not just that, he was, like I said, father of Local 22. He helped us out with countless contracts, but he was a big part of the Tacoma Advantage. And so years ago, and we're trending in this way, again, labor and management walked hand in hand and overcame plenty of obstacles. Well, Jim was a big part of that. And so before I stumble on anything else, thank you.
Thank you, Dax. Appreciate it very much. And knowing Jim as well as I did, I agree with everything you said. Thank you. I have no one else signed up. Is there anybody that has any written comments? Nope. Anybody in the audience want to share anything? Okay. Seeing that, we'll go to the consent agenda. Items on the consent agenda are considered routine and taken up by one motion and one vote unless any commissioner requests an item to be removed for individual consideration. The consent agenda consists of the approval of the minutes of February 18th, 2026, disbursement certifications during the period of 2/10/26 to 3/6/26, check certifications, numbers 4823 to 4892 and 4894 to 5077 in the amount of $3,673 and, as I tear this off, 32 cents. And electronic payments in the amount of $9,673,320.62 for a total of $13,346,471.94. Check number 4893 in the amount of $14,110 to the State Auditor's Office. We will be voting on the consent item in two votes due to the check to the State Auditor's Office. I'd like to now call for a motion to approve consent items 5A and 5B1 as presented. Is there a motion?
So moved.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Commissioner Keller, seconded by Commissioner McCarthy. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Now I'd like to call for a motion to approve consent item 5B2 as presented. This is to the state auditor. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Commissioner Eng, second by Commissioner Keller. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed and all those abstaining.
I abstain.
Okay. Thank you. This brings us to our commission actions. So with that,
excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
It's the briefing.
Oh, issue briefing.
Yeah, sorry.
Do we? Oh, go right ahead.
Apologies.
That's quite all right.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. For the record, you have Tony Warfield and Sarah Potter here, and we'd like to give you an update on the Blair Waterway Dredge Program. Just as a quick reminder, this effort is the integration of about 15 different projects within our CIP. And what we're trying to do here is create a program of work that is, well, integrated. And the goal of this program is to modernize the Blair Waterway for it to be big ship, ultra large container ship ready, and to use some of the excess material from this effort to build much needed crab and salmon habitat out on along Greenview Drive. The only thing I really want to focus on this slide is the cost-benefit ratio. When the Corps of Engineers did their feasibility study for this program, or for deepening the federal navigation channel, they had a cost-benefit ratio of about 10, which is really, really good. The federal minimum standard for a project to move forward is 3. Because the Corps has, their cost estimate has come down, the ratio's actually gone up to almost 14. So what that means simply is for every dollar the federal government spends on that federal navigation channel, $14 get returned to the U.S. economy. I don't know if I've ever worked on a project with a cost-benefit ratio like that. Okay, I love this slide. Thank you very much, Leah. What this does is it's all the projects that make up this program coded by the funding source and then providing the construction year. So Sarah's going to go into the detail on all of these projects, but I just want to lay out kind of the overview. You know, we've been talking about this stuff since 2018, I think. Well, construction starts next fall, and that first construction project is True Grit. It's a cleanup job that has to be done before the Corps will deepen the channel adjacent to it. It has to remove contaminated sediments that the Corps won't touch. Then following after that, about a year from now, we have the Lincoln Avenue Ditch remedial action. That is a cleanup job that is required to do the tribal cutback and is also required before the Corps will dredge material adjacent to that area. Following right behind that will be the tribal cutback, Q3 of 27. Simultaneous will be berth strengthening and deepening at Washington United. And then the next year, we'll be looking at berth deepening and strengthening at Husky and getting them down to minus 57 to match the channel. After that, in 2028, the Corps will start construction on deepening the channel itself and simultaneously with that material start building their portion of the ECHO site or the habitat site out along Marine View Drive. And we will start our portion of that site at about the same time. Another graphic I really like. Thank you again, Leah. This is the program schedule. How many lines are in the master schedule?
Oh, I don't know, 300 at least.
Something like that. Yeah. So this is rolling up like 300 lines of work that goes into making this program happen. But the way this is coded is, so if you look at the blue area, that's Port of Tacoma work. And you can, I won't go through every one of our projects, but The light blue is the design and permitting phase. The dark blue are the actual construction seasons that we're working on. The hashed lines are the portion of the year we're allowed to do in-water work. So we can only do in-water work from mid-July to mid-February of each year. And then you look at, well, the next block down is the basically the partnership between the port and the core. Again, you can see the design years, design permitting years, and the construction years. And then at the bottom there is the work that funded by the Alliance, but managed by the Port of Tacoma. Okay, turn it over to Sarah.
Hi, good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm going to attempt to briefly summarize these projects and the progress since we last gave you an update in May 2025. The first project is the navigation channel deepening, the port and core project, which you can see all across the Blair Waterway in that red polygon there. This is the keystone project in the Blair Waterway program and has been the catalyst for a lot of this other work. Overall, there will be 2.3 million cubic yards of material removed from the navigation channel to get it to a depth of negative 57 feet. And that red footprint that you see here is what we confirmed with SHPSIM with the Puget Sound pilots last winter before that.
Could you say how much you're going to remove again?
2.3 million cubic yards.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a big number. Yeah, since we last spoke, the sediment chemistry characterization for disposal was completed. And the results from that are actually cleaner than we had predicted in feasibility. Of the 2.3 million cubic yards, 2.1 million could be suitable for open water disposal, and a subset of that 2.1 million may also meets criteria for sediment beneficial use. So that would be going toward the joint port core echo site, which we'll talk about later. So key next steps, the core is going to complete their 65% design this June. In Q3, I will be back here asking for another authorization to have the executive director sign the project partnership agreement, or that's kind of the core's name for the construction agreement that will describe the project and the responsibilities of the port and the core for costs and for executing the actual construction. That agreement that you'll see this fall will have a draft cost share, but the cost has continued to go down as we get nearer to the project. In the last iteration, it dropped $60 million overall. So I don't know if we'll see that big of a jump again, but things are trending well for this. Another bullet point that didn't make it up here is we recently were able to host a VIP tour for Major General Jason Kelly from the Corps DC headquarters. And he came out to look at the site and kind of tour around with us and talk to the project team and was very supportive of the project, emphasized execution on a schedule and in a budget. So I think the take home is that core leadership in DC has their eyes on this project, and that's really good for us as we move toward construction in 2028. Next up is True Grit Remedial Action. This is one of the two remediation projects that Tony mentioned earlier. You can see it kind of in the middle of the waterway in blue there. And again, there was legacy contamination in the side slopes of the Federal Navigation Channel that needs to be removed before the core will deepen in this area. In 2024 and 25, we performed sediment sampling out here, and the contamination pattern shows that it originates from a historic shipbuilding on the site and grit that was spilled by the former tenant. So this figure shows the area of sediment that is to be cleaned up as part of an independent cleanup action. That cleanup action plan is being coordinated with ecology currently, and the Corps has verbally approved that getting this work done will allow them to move forward for their purposes. So, next steps for this, we are looking at 60% design and permits in Q2. We're going really fast on this one. Construction is to begin later this year in late Q3, so I would expect a construction authorization request from engineering in the very near future. Our second cleanup is Lincoln Avenue Ditch. I can see it over there about just to the right of the midway of the Blair, in that blue and white kind of vertical lines. Again, this is the footprint of this project intersects with the Federal Navigation Channel as well as the cutback. So that is how it became a part of the program. And once again, the cores won't deepen in this area until this contaminant liability is removed. You can see the outline of the ditch a little bit better in this one. The yellow polygon there is where the port cap contamination back in 1993 is part of the land transfer to the tribe. In 1993, this was protective enough for the tribe to build the Emerald Queen Casino out there, but it needs to be remediated now because that contamination could be removed, when it's being dredged, could be exposed to the waterway. So to the right there, you can see the hatched areas, and that is the prism of removal that we are proposing. That cleanup action plan is being coordinated with the tribe and EPA, and we are looking at any final data needs for the design. This project will be sequenced ahead of the cutback, which is to begin in Q2 2027, so I would expect an off later this year or very early next for construction. So moving past our cleanups, the next project is the Seaport Alliance's deepening of the Husky and Wet berths to match the Federal Navigation Channel depth. This would be beginning in 2027 for Wet and 2028 for Husky. So these projects are pretty smooth sailing. We're moving through design and permitting on track for a Q3 2027 start. In good news, all 300,000 cubic yards of dredged sediment has been approved for beneficial use by the Commencement Bay Beneficial Use Group. And that's really excellent precedent setting for the remainder of ECHO on the sediment criteria and process to evaluate it. Also, thanks to our friends in government affairs, we've received a $2 million earmark for the dredging. And additionally, the tow wall portion of this project is HMT eligible. Next, I will briefly cover the Blair Tribal Cutback because you will hear about this a bit more later. This property you can see in blue on the north side of the Blair, and it obviously overlaps with the Lincoln Avenue Ditch. It also has an intersection with the side slopes of the Federal Navigation Channel. So here's a kind of a close-up of the dredge footprint. You can see it there in blue, the dark blue outline. The purpose of this project overall is to widen the Blair and to execute the 2008 agreement with the tribe to remove that shoreline. The port baked this into the 2008 agreement in order to allow unimpeded ship passage down the Blair in the event that the tribe was to build a terminal in the future. So again, more detail on this to come. I don't want to spoil all the surprises, so we will get back to this later. Next up, we have ECHO. You can see this in the upper left corner of the map here, and you might notice there are actually two projects. There is the Port and Core ECHO Beneficial Use Project in red. That would be sourced from material from the Federal Navigation Channel. And then there is the blue nearshore portion, which is the port habitat site. And that would be sourced from the berths and or cutback. So here's another view of those projects. It kind of gives you an idea of the scale of what is being placed offshore and then what we would be placing inshore. This design you see in front of you is the result of a pretty tough year of negotiating policy with the Corps. The port required the site to be built to plus 16 mean low-low, and that was to protect the shoreline and to protect our site, our habitat site. For various reasons, the Corps policy didn't allow it, so we had a lot of discussion about that. I want to say the discussion was staff to staff, and then we did have to lean on Eric much more than we would have hoped to talk to the commanding officer of the Corps, but it all worked out really well, actually. We're in a really good place. Both projects are moving forward. We have been promised the height that is sufficient to stabilize the shoreline and to keep our site in place, and we are just working through all the details at this point. In the worst case scenario, the Corps pays 65% of the larger outside island, and the port in the compromise we made would pay 100% of the top, and that represents about 6% of the total placement. So, yeah. The solution we came to also kind of makes our sequencing a little messy, but overall, this is much cheaper than to go this project alone, and we do not have the risk of disrupting the schedule for the Federal Navigation Channel because of permitting issues. So it was the right move. Let's see. Next, more echo. We put as many pictures in as we could of it. You can see here this concept, which is really nice when you're looking at just topo lines over and over and trying to imagine what a site looks like. I find seeing something with green on it and imagine being a bird flying over is much, much more refreshing. You can see our site there to the right, where the port would be establishing riparian marsh and mudflat along the shoreline. And then out to the left there, it kind of starts to look like a barrier island when you think about what's really poking up from above below water. Hoping that on top we could recruit shore grasses, maybe establish some pickleweed, there might be large woody debris out there. Something else of interest here is you can see those kind of tan lines around the perimeter of the island. And those are the elevations where the port will be placing oyster shell at the Puyallup tribe's request. Shell enhances juvenile Dungeness crab habitat, and that is both good for tribal shellfish resources and for baby salmon that like to feed on baby crab larvae. So another interesting way to enhance the habitat brought to us by our partners at the tribe. We just had a great meeting with the tribe and the Corps and other regulators about this and our updated project, and everybody is really supportive and excited about it, and there's really truly alignment between the groups. So, oh, I have one more echo picture. This one's my favorite. This is kind of like a 3D cross section you can see with, on the left out here would be Commencement Bay, and to the right up at the top is a little sliver of Marine View Drive. If you look at it this way, you can kind of see the like nice shallow placement that is going up to the barrier island on the outside, and that'll help dissipate waves and reduce erosion. And then on the internal side, we would probably have slower waters, have good refuge and forage for juvenile salmon and crab. This project's just a really great example of nature-based solutions and designing projects to work with nature instead of against it and incorporate habitat whenever possible. So there's a lot of excitement and energy about this and beneficial use in general in Puget Sound, and I think the port is at the forefront of that. It's a good feeling. Last project update. You can see here in orange, this is the West Hylobos log dock property operated by the Seaport. Here we're scoping out how to transload material from all of those dredges you heard about earlier. It would be cost shared for among at least three projects. Right now we are developing an ILA for that lease and working toward defining the needs for the project and duration, and also working with the Corps to understand their cost sharing policy for the portion that they are using. So as a really startling, drastic change from pretty pictures, here is a giant table that I will not be reading to you. The purpose of it is to show the plan of finance for the entire program, and the current estimated costs are in the second to last column. The costs are generally going down is one thing I want to draw attention to. Again, that deepening cost was decreased by $60 million from the last iteration. And what you're not seeing up there is the Corps portion that they're paying. That's just the portion that the port's paying, but the total project is over $180 million, I think. So we're paying less than half. Additionally, you can see the starred projects have HMT-eligible components, and the HMT-eligible portion is estimated at $37 million. Take home there at the bottom for the Seaport and for the Port of Tacoma, it's still a pretty large number. But Tony will tell you about the value of the program.
Okay, as Sarah noted, that's a big bottom line. That's a big number. And this is, it's a big number. It has come down with the Corps' new estimate. But so this is a really, really complicated program of work, integrating designs, particularly integrating construction sequencing and all that. But the desired outcomes are actually very straightforward. What we're trying to do is modernize the Blair Waterway, get it down to minus 57 in the nav channel, get our international container berths down to match that level, so minus 57, and be big ship ready. So we're the design vessel for this effort. It's an 18,000 TEU ship. It could accommodate 20,000 TEUs. Without this project, we would stand the risk of becoming a boutique backwater port. If you want to stay competitive in the container market, you need to be able to at least handle an 18,000 TEU ship on this coast anyway. Oh, and I will add to that, this effort also clears the way for the tribe to be able to build their terminal, which will hopefully someday lead to some type of partnership, joint venture, what have you. So again, trying to push more cargo through the gateway. Environmental impact. So we're just talking about the dredging portion of the job here. I mean, if it needs, if there's a permit out there, this project needs it. A lot of permitting to go on. Again, the two cleanup jobs have been on our CIP for at least 10, maybe even 15 years, are getting worked on with it, or taken care of with this project. Stormwater is always complicated when you're doing upland work or dewatering, and no new air emissions would come from this effort. Okay, given that I'm not going to be here, Sarah will let you know what she and Norm will be working on the next few quarters.
We've made a lot of progress, as you heard today, but we still have a lot more work to do. I'm going to cover the upcoming commission actions that we're expecting to need in the near future for 2026, maybe very beginning of 27. I think the first one to note again is the project partnership agreement signature for the Federal Navigation Channel. I would expect both of the construction authorization requests for the cleanups and an initiation of the oyster shell for ECHO. Also, one that is of top of mind today is the cutback, but you will hear about that in our next presentation. But before we get there, are there questions?
Well, thank you. I know it's going to be the first item on our action. I'm just curious if the commission wants to just go into the action and then we could ask the questions. Or do you have questions right now?
I have some questions, whenever you want.
Let's do this. Let's go to our commission action part of the agenda, which is the Blair Tribal Cutback Project Implementation Approval, which is going to be presented by the two people sitting there presently.
Okay.
We just moved
it. We did move it. All right, thank you. Okay, so at the end of this presentation, Sarah will be seeking authorization for Executive Director to sign the Blair Cutback Implementation Agreement, and for project, an increase in project authorization to $63.5 million. You know, this is a really interesting request. The lineage goes all the way back to the lands claim settlement. So if you think of 1988 as being kind of the start year, I was a senior in college, she was in diapers, so it's been going on for a while. This area has evolved over time. They would cap the ditch, became the Emerald Queen Casino, the casino moved. There's an agreement between the tribe and SSA for terminal development. Great Recession hits, things really fall apart all across in a lot of places. Tribe regains interest in building the facility out there. So 38 years later, here we are. It's literally go time on getting this cutback done. And you may be sitting there thinking, why do we need an implementation agreement to implement an agreement we already have? And there's kind of two answers to that. The 2008 agreement did not have the project level specificity required to actually design, permit, and build something. So we had to fill in the detail. And that's what this agreement does. And then another thing, as non-lawyer staff were working on this, it became pretty clear pretty fast that, you know, the port and tribe have different authorities, you know, legal authorities. The port is constrained, fairly highly constrained even, by the state constitution and our enabling legislation. The tribe is a sovereign nation at the federal level. So somehow we had to figure out how to dovetail those authorities and get project level detail to make it all work. Fortunately, we had really smart lawyers who could figure out the authority part of it, because the rest of us were working on the project part of it. So that's why we need this agreement. Oh, and I will turn it over completely to Sarah.
All right, I'm going to try to reorient us back to the project and the work that we are performing here. Again, the ultimate goal of this is to widen the Blair Waterway in the area by removing a portion of the tribe bank along the Blair. And this is to enable the terminal, the future terminal that they would be building, to align with our EB1. This was considered and outlined in the 2008 agreement with the tribe. And the purpose of it is to ensure there's an 850 feet fender-to-fender clearance from whatever future terminal they would build, and the fender of what? The Washington United terminals across the waterway. This is the most difficult part of the waterway. This area has booms down constraints, and we saw with SHPSM, with the Puget Sound pilots, if the knuckle is removed, just the whole waterway works better. So it's an important project for ship traffic. Next. All right, a little more onto the project scope. You can see the cross section here, and you'd want to imagine the Blair to the left and landward is to the right. That blue dotted polygon is what we would be removing for the Blair tribal cutback. That is 1.3 million cubic yards of material, and it would be coming out of the waterway in 2027. The red area is how this overlaps with the Federal Navigation Channel deepening. So you can see there's some overlap, and then there's a bit on either side of that that would be for just one project or the other, and that would begin in 28. Also, this is just to illustrate it's really complicated, and there's a lot of thought going into this, so. All right, here we have a summary of the implementation agreement terms. Those are detailed in your memo, and again, essentially what the purpose is to add the project level detail to that conceptual agreement and define the roles and responsibilities and costs. Overall, my take home from this is that the tribe is performing and executing the work for the cutback, and the port would be performing DMMP characterization, which we've already started, be a co-applicant for permits, provide technical and coordination support for the tribe, and reimbursement for the construction of the cutback and the armoring. So, as I mentioned, in May 2025, we sought authorization for the initial coordination and DMMP sampling. This was done ahead of the implementation agreement signature to protect the schedule, because that can often be a bottleneck figuring out your disposal. So we've got that sampling complete, and results are coming in pretty much clean. We're hoping to use, there's a lot of clean material beneath, and we're hoping to use that out at ECHO if it's approved by beneficial use group. We are continuing to coordinate with the tribe and to lay groundwork with the regulators through our liaison. Our schedule for this project, it is into the implementation agreement. This is kind of an aggressive schedule, and with a thing about the tribe driving the design and permitting is that the port doesn't really own the schedule. However, we're going to do everything we can to help them meet it and work together on that collaboratively. All right, another table. I included this cross breakdown to kind of better explain the underpinning of today's authorization request. We include the port activities in this table and the reimbursements that are defined in the agreement. I would like to note that this table does include sales tax, which generally does not, a Washington State sales tax, which generally doesn't apply to this project because it's on Puyallup Tribe property. It also includes a healthy contingency, and overall, it's good to remember that the tribe will be reimbursed on actuals submitted and invoices that are approved. So today's request is uses this information and this data to find a final number for an authorization increase, and we need to meet that full project cost today in order for the tribe to move forward and initiate the project. Here we show that previous authorization from 5/20/25. That second line is the total that is associated with the implementation agreement. So, environmental impacts. It's a little atypical because, again, the permitting will be performed by the tribe. The port will be a joint applicant, and we are helping to support as much as possible, including the use of our liaison and coordination with our WERDA rep from the Corps Regulatory. As we talked about earlier in the last presentation, Lincoln Avenue Ditch intersects with this project, but this is going to be performed by the port prior to the cutback work. Air quality, there will be no new emissions generated by this work except for during the construction, and future emissions that would come from the terminal would be evaluated during that facility's permitting by the tribe. So, alternatives. Again, the implementation agreement just adds enough detail to the existing port obligation for us to be able to run it as a project manager and add it to this program. We want to be able to execute this work, and that is how we are, that is the guidance that we needed to make it happen. So for next steps would be to sign the implementation agreement, continue coordination with the tribe's design team, and to start working on our invoice review process with the tribe and with port finance internally. So in conclusion, today's staff request the following Blair Tribal cutback project authorizations. Number one, authorize the executive director to execute the Blair cutback implementation agreement between the Port of Tacoma and the Puyallup Tribe of Indians. And two, increase project authorization in the amount of $63,500,000 for a total authorized amount of $64,834,000.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would be looking at this, and Heather, tell me if I'm wrong, but as one motion.
I think for the record, we actually want you to take two separate actions.
As I stated, I want to do this in two motions.
Exactly. That's correct. That's correct. Okay. And Commissioner Marzina, before you proceed, I just wanted to also point out we are joined here today in the audience by Sarah Lawson with the Schwabe firm, who serves as outside counsel on Indian law matters to the port and was instrumental in working on this agreement. So if there are specific commission questions directed towards some of the terms of the implementation agreement, I'm going to freely phone a friend in the audience to help answer those.
Thank you, and thank you for being here. With that understanding, do I hear a motion on the first part of the authorization?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Ang, seconded by Commissioner Keller. And question, well, I could make a motion for the second. Well, let's do the first part, right? Any questions?
Yes, please, one at a time, if you don't
mind. I'm doing that. Okay, questions or comments, and I know Commissioner McCarthy had some questions to begin with, so I'll start down at that end.
Sure. I've got some financial questions, but let me start with the ECHO project that we're gonna do. And building the island. I know we had some questions before and talked a little bit about the how an island's going to work out there in terms of handling king tides and other things that occur as the water goes up towards Marine View Drive there. What's the current thinking on that as opposed to just extending the marsh out longer?
Okay. So the design, well, we got Norm here. He can probably help too. But the design is set at a 10-to-1 slope, which is the angle of approach. It's the angle of the beach out there. So it matches the slope of the island, matches the slope of the beach. So the idea is to break the energy of the waves on a long slope. Plus 16 is what the coastal engineers came up with as a elevation required, a final elevation required to be able to withstand storms.
Okay. I mean, so you feel pretty confident that that's not going to wash away?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that area takes a lot of energy. I mean, there's no, you know, no secret there. But yes, that is where, you know, the engineers are getting to the point where, yeah, that's going to work at that elevation, that width of the beam and the berm, excuse me, and that slope of the beach.
Have they done that elsewhere in the state, you know?
I don't know if they've had a design exactly similar to this, but across the country and lots of places, the Corps does very similar work.
Okay, thank you. A couple more questions.
Go right ahead.
So the first motion is to authorize the executive director to execute the CUPLAC implementation agreement between the port and the tribe, and the second actually authorizes the additional funds,
right,
as I understand it. But related to the funding part of this, the $63 million for that project, I remember we used to carry it on our capital improvement project budget for years at $40 million, and now it's 63.5. When I compare that number with the slide you had on the overall cost of the implementation plan, and you might want to pull that one, the one that has scary numbers on it.
Oh, yeah, that different presentation, the previous presentation?
The previous one? The really big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it.
I could not make it. Less
ones that make
ridiculous.
You choke.
Yeah, that one right there.
Yeah.
And I see the Northwest Seaport Alliance, Port of Tacoma total $188 million, grand total $240 million. Does that sum include the $64 million that we're going to spend on the cutback agreement?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure of that. And that sum is paid over a period of essentially 5 years, is that correct?
The 240?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the 64 is paid over?
Duration of construction?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Based on the duration of construction.
We spent a lot of money today, but it's more than the cost for our Husky Terminal improvement project, yeah. And I just had to comment when you said that in 1988 when this all started and you were in college and you were in diapers, I made me think I was sitting in this chair as a port commissioner. so maybe I was in diapers.
John, you should have done something then. It wouldn't cost us so much money.
Yeah, that deferring doesn't always work, does it? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? JT.
Thank you. And because I'm coming to this very late in the game, the questions that I have are for me to catch up, not to be second-guessing anybody. But on the what you described as the barrier island, it is creating habitat for salmon and crab and other things. Is there a way to maximize the habitat value for them and minimize its usefulness for pinnipeds and avian predation, or do they work together?
I'm aware of some methods for avian predation reduction. We haven't gotten that far into the details yet. I'm not sure about pinnipeds, but we can look into that.
Okay, another question.
No, go ahead. Right ahead.
All right, thank you.
That's a good one.
You were alluding to the competitive situation in the West Coast and making the point that in order to remain competitive, we needed to do the deepening. And I'm not disputing that at all. I'm curious, can you tell us if there are peer ports that are making a decision not to proceed with deepening?
Wow, I don't know. I honestly don't know. If they're, I mean, everyone's shooting for at least 57, 58. Prince Rupert has that naturally. Others are dredging to that level, but I don't know if any are. You know what? I wonder about Portland. I've never heard of them actually trying to go for the ultra-large containers.
I think Executive Director Johnson may have an answer.
Yeah, good question, Commissioner Wilcox. The primary competitors of the port, which are Vancouver, BC, Prince Rupert, Oakland, Los Angeles, and Long Beach, are all deepening to that level. They either are or they're planning to. Portland will never, I shouldn't say never. The Columbia River is 43 feet deep. That's how deep the Columbia River channel is, and I don't expect that they're going to go that much deeper. It's not really my call, but the river ports don't have that kind of depth. Neither does Grace Harbor. Grace Harbor is at about 38, I think.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Ring?
Well, first I wanted to comment, yes, there have been ports that deepened but not decided not to, particularly if we were looking at the other top 10 ports. Port of Charleston deepened it to, I believe, 55. We're already a deep water port at 52. They recently deepened it, and they had all sorts of issues with their deepening that they wanted to share, but they wanted to share privately, not in a public presentation. So you might want to contact them. And it had also some tribal issues, environmental issues, and some community issues that they wanted to share, but privately.
Port of Charleston?
Port of Charleston. They're in the top 10. They're a great port. They also have autos, but they've decided to put them somewhere else, like a warehouse that they can just simply. They've kind of reminded me of Tacoma. Port of Savannah has deepened. Our East Coast competitors have deepened. I guess my question, I did have a question here, with regards to the costs and the cost sharing besides Seaport Alliance and Port of Tacoma, is if you take a look at that 52 and 188, how much is it the share of U.S. Corps of Engineers, any of that, or is that just ours? Because things have changed, the formula changed on the deepening with the federal level.
Right.
So I was wondering how much did we save on that? Is that part of this calculation? And then anything with grants, I know also the HMT, Harbor Maintenance Tax, with regards to dredging. I'm wondering how much is that taken into account of, or is that just simply Port of Tacoma?
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's helpful.
The big one. Yeah, that is. Okay, let's see. If I can parse these out. The cost share has changed very much to our benefit, where I believe the cutoff line is at minus 50 feet. So anything we're dredging that is shallower than 50 feet, the Corps would be paying 75%, port 25. I believe if it's deeper, maybe it's not 50, maybe it's 55, actually, I take that back. So it's 50 to 55, 75% of it is borne by the federal government, 25 to us, and then deeper than 55, so 6-7 will be 50-50 split on the costs. The other question.
HMT.
So that's really important. Yeah. So the HMT is useful in two different areas on this program. One, we can use it to for most legacy contamination. So True Grit should be HMT eligible. Use the funds for that. And the other is, while we can't use it to dredge a berth area, we can use it to build the tow walls. In the berth areas, and the tow walls are really the expensive part of the berth strengthening and deepening.
I guess I was wondering, how much is that 188 in solid stone, or is there HMT, or we already took into account the Corps share?
Oh, that's our portion.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Then I guess I will just explain. This is an extremely monumental project for the Port of Tacoma and Seaport Alliance for our global competitiveness. But I do feel it's like for the next era for the Port of Tacoma. Mm-hmm. And it's a very complicated project. But I'm very excited for it because it shows not only our future growth, which we better work on that cargo demand, but also our inclusiveness of the Puyallup Tribe of Indians, our deep commitment to and partnership with the tribe and to environment. And that's probably also my second question about the maintenance of that ECHO project and the success of it. So if, you know, ongoing costs of any of these particular projects. Because I feel, Gary, this is like the next phase after our Maritime 253, Maritime Port Plaza, which is a lot more complicated. And then also, I guess this is more of a Seaport Alliance-ish question, but probably you have thought of in terms of the implementation phase and coordination with the shippers, the terminal operators, and also how would that impact our revenue in the next, as we do this project, I'm sure there's some sort of impacts with our major terminals.
So let me start with the first part. Norm Gilbert's been working real closely with the terminal operators on a construction sequencing that works for them. Is Norm coming up? In terms of impact to revenue, I don't know. See if Norm does.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Norman Gilbert, Senior Project Manager with the Engineering Group. I don't have anything on revenue for the impact of the terminals, but during the phasing of the deepening projects in the terminals, we will be taking those facilities down to a single berth for periods of time. We've designed the projects to be within as short of a window as we can to minimize those impacts. What was the other part?
Oh, that's the revenue part.
I can't speak to the revenue on that.
That may be something I'd probably want follow-up from the Seaport Alliance, because as we know, the Port of Tacoma constitutes about 60% of the revenue of the Seaport Alliance and a lot of the work. And considering this project would impact that, although it would eventually, the growth would return and then some, that's just a concern.
Any other questions with regards to the Port of Tacoma? Commissioner Keller.
Great, thank you. I just am curious, what do you attribute to the cost being lower than you originally thought? Not that I'm complaining.
Yeah, no. So when the Corps did their feasibility study, they had all kinds of underwater structure. A bunch of it was right against the tribe property because they were trying to avoid going onto tribe property, even though we kept telling them we have this cutback agreement. And there was some air, they assumed some underwater structure near the south end of Husky and in the Turning Basin, that after going through the ship simulation and really refining their design, those underwater structures have gone away.
Okay, great.
They also, they still have not accounted for the much better sediment characterization than we saw. In the last update, they were still accounting for the feasibility level where we thought that we were going to have to take a lot more upland. This next iteration will show that we have most of the material, 93%, can go either open water or to ECHO, and I think that will be another big reduction. So
great. Yeah. Great work. Thank you.
Okay, see, no other, go ahead, John.
One quick question, yep. If I could. Dredging of the knuckle across from Washington United Terminal, it looks like it's slated for the third quarter of 2027. Okay, thank you. And that's about the time that we're negotiating our lease with Evergreen Line. It's going to take place about the same time then. Okay, thank you.
Okay, with regards to no other questions or comments, the cutback agreement between the Port of Tacoma and the Puyallup Tribe of Indians, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Very good. Next, I'll be looking for a motion to increase the project authorization in the amount of $63,500,000 for a total authorized amount of $64,834,000. Is there a motion to that effect?
Also move.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner McCarthy, seconded by Commissioner Keller. Questions or comments? I just have a quick comment. I look back in the history of a little bit of the Blair Waterway, and I think John can really remember that, and probably some people out there, that the biggest impediment we had was the Blair Bridge. And be perfectly honest, we loved it when a ship hit it and left it in the upright position, simply because we can then have ships going through without worrying about it going up and down. I look at this as the second phase of opening up that waterway to meet the demands of the future and making us to be continued as a Class A port for customers to call. So I just wanted to bring that up. So, seeing no other questions or comments, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And thank you all for your work. I know you got a lot more up. And Tony, we're not going to let you go until this is done. I don't care what you say. So,
I got to talk to my wife about that one. So,
thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay. The next item for action will be item 6B, C, and D, which will be presented by Heather Burgess. But each item will be considered with a separate motion and vote. So with that, I'll call on Heather Burgess.
Thanks, Commissioner Marzano. For the record, Heather Burgess, you're serving as your Port Legal Counsel. So the good news is this isn't going to cost $240 million.
Also,
the bad news is there's a lot of paperwork and things to get through. So I appreciate your patience as we work through these. So at the conclusion of this presentation, I'm going to be asking the commission to take three separate actions. The reason you're getting one briefing from me is because they all funnel into the last action, which is approval of your annual review and approval of your master policy directive, which is what delegates authority to your executive director to run the day-to-day operations of the port. I'm going to be doing the presentation, but we do have a couple things here that specifically the first two resolutions pertaining to contracting items, and I do have port staff from contracts as well as from your IT department on the cybersecurity issue available to answer any specific questions. So just by way of background, this is an exercise, not necessarily doing three resolutions, but reviewing your master policy is something we do every year as a matter of best practices. Your port statute authorizes you to delegate authority to the executive director, but it has to be taken through this specific action. So every year we engage in a similar process where we go through legal staff and the port management team and the executive director go through the current master policy and identify areas where we believe changes appropriate or necessary, sometimes as a result of changes in the law, which we have a couple of those here. We also compare this in the process to master policy resolution for the Northwest Seaport Alliance because we have shared staff and shared policies in several of these areas and in the interest of administrative efficiency. So this year we undertook that process. We identified the need for these two additional resolutions that you see as part of the recommended updates, which require separate actions. And so we're presenting all three of them for you at one time today. Of course, if you choose to not approve either of the two preceding resolutions, we would make corresponding changes to reflect that lack of approval in your master policy. And we did send an initial draft of these materials out to Commission a few weeks ago on February 27th. So I'm going to start with the first of the three resolutions, which is your resolution 2026-02-PT, which is your MRSC rosters resolution. The small works roster procedures for public works contracts and state law allow agencies to award qualifying small contracts. A couple of years ago, the statute was changed to increase that limit, the dollar limit to $350,000. I will preview for you that the state legislature has further amended that statute, so we will see changes again proposed probably with next year's iteration to reflect changes that were just adopted by the legislature, assuming the governor signs that bill. In 2023, the legislature, in addition to raising the limit, added some additional provisions for direct contracting. But in order to use all the tools and features of this program, the commission actually has to adopt a resolution which meets the requirements of state law. The resolution that you have in front of you for approval follows a state-recommended template for local governments that was developed, I believe, by the MRSC. In addition to developing the policies and procedures required for compliance, we've also provided for the procedures allowed for professional services and personal services contracts to be awarded through a consultant roster process. So that's the overview of the MRSC rosters resolution that you have in front of you. Before I go into the cybersecurity contracting exemption, did the commission have any questions pertaining to small works?
Yeah, and what about the possibility of acting on each one when you're done prior to that?
We can certainly do that if you prefer.
I would like to if there's no objection. So with that, is there a motion to approve resolution 2026-02-PT?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Keller, second by Commissioner Eng. Now, questions and or comments with regards to this resolution?
Just a question. This is not the resolution involving cybersecurity, then?
That's correct. That's the next one on deck.
Great, thank you.
Any other? Okay, seeing that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Okay, one down, two to go. So the second resolution you have in front of you is a bit more unusual. 2026-03-PT is a resolution that would provide commission authorization, which is allowed in state law in the port statute, to exempt certain defined categories of cybersecurity contracts from competitive solicitation. And I do have Martin Adamson, your director of IT, here available to address any specific questions as to the basis for this. But it's no secret that government agencies, including other port districts, Port of Seattle among them, have faced cyber attacks and risks to their technology and data. This continues to be an ongoing and present danger to the port. We are at high risk for those types of attacks, including particularly because of our status as a military port. And IT staff is of the opinion that certain of the information that's required for the port to participate in competitive solicitation process strictly following state law can require releasing information that increases that risk. RCW 5319-0205 does allow the Port Commission by resolution to exempt specific classes or groups of contracts from competitive solicitation requirements when it's determined that it's either not appropriate or cost effective. So I just wanted to point out, especially probably for Commissioner McCarthy's benefit, that neither of those terms are specifically defined in the statute, nor are there any case law interpreting what they mean, nor are there any state adopted best practices or procedures that are to be used when adopting these particular exemptions. The Port of Tacoma actually had previously done this one time in 2008, exempting certain specific classes of contracts. That's been later superseded. But they seem to be related to, there was executive coaching and a couple of other ancillary types of contracts which were exempted at that time, and that authorization was later not renewed. The other example we drew from was in 2020. The Port of Seattle exempted certain youth services contracts using the same provision, and so we took that example as well in terms of formulating what was the adequate recitals and fact-finding to justify the commission's decision in this regard. What this resolution would do if approved, it would exempt certain specialized cybersecurity services, which are then defined in both this resolution as well as your master policy resolution as a newly defined term, from competitive solicitation requirements under this authority so we can better protect security information, but it would not otherwise change the port's contracting policies or procedures for these contracts. And I understand, since we prepared these materials, that the contracting department has also developed a specific policy about how to see your procedure to govern the award of these contracts in case the exemption is adopted, so that it wouldn't just be, friends of IT are us, for example, being able to be awarded these contracts. And I'm happy to, if you have specific questions when we get to that, I have Sharon Rothwell as well as Martin Adamson available. I think that's my last slide on cybersecurity. It is.
Yes, it is. With that, do I hear a motion with regards to approving resolution 2026-03-PT, accepting cybersecurity service for competitive solicitation?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Keller.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Wilcox. Questions or comments? I know Commissioner McCarthy had a question.
Sure. I do, because first, I guess the underlying concept is, in government, competition's good, competitive solicitation is good, it's a good practice, and we should do it in every situation that we possibly can. And that's why the language is that to exempt somebody from that obligation, there has to be a determination that a competitive solicitation process is not appropriate. So I need to understand, what's the nature and extent, how much money are we talking about with regard to the types of contracts that would now be deemed not subject to the competitive rules? How much are contracts at this time for that type of work?
I'm going to phone a friend on that one. Come on up, Martin.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Martin Adamson. I'm the Chief Information Officer at the Port of Tacoma. The two contracts, I think, that would most recently have come under this type of agreement were both for under $150,000 each. So they're three-year contracts.
Under a hundred and some thousand dollars.
Under each of those two contracts should have been under $150,000.
And have we, did we change vendors for either of those contracts just recently? Didn't we have a change there?
We had a change where we have two vendors, one who provides our audit services and one who provides our, it's called our virtual cybersecurity operations center. So they monitor our networks. Yeah. And we had a switch between those vendors because that was in the best interest of the port.
Did we switch in mid-course with one of them, or am I thinking?
We did. We had to let one vendor go from a prior vendor, and we switched the services that one of the existing vendors was providing to provide the services from the prior vendor.
Okay, thank you. And just maybe you or Heather can clarify for me. If we were to exempt those types of contracts from the competitive process, how would you envision that a decision would be made and by whom to satisfy that there is some real competition there?
Sure. As Heather said, there is a procedure or policy, manual policy that has been drafted. That is that it's not an IT policy, it's actually a contracts policy. So contracts manage that process. They make sure that we're following all the guidelines and process steps that are outlined in there. As part of that, we would be in a more informal way getting quotes to make sure that we're having a degree of competitive selection there, and that the pricing is appropriate and matches our benchmarks for those types of services. We would also be leveraging state contracts and other types of pre-competed solicitation vehicles that when we do this in other areas as well, so that we don't have to go out directly with our own RFP and put that information out into the public space.
Is there any other way to ensure things remain confidential other than this, in terms of either in your request for proposals, you're not real definitive, like I want an Xbox that's going to do this sort of security measure, but you're not real definitive. It's more of a general nature that during your evaluation process, you could give people an opportunity to compete, but still your evaluation of what they've suggested is something that you could entertain in a confidential fashion.
I think there's a sliding scale of options.
Pardon me, sir?
There's a sliding scale of options open to us for this type of thing. Obviously, the more information we do put out, the greater the risk that we expose the port to. We could certainly write some language into the procedure part of the policy that would, under certain circumstances, we may be able to do certain things like that, if that would satisfy your question.
Yeah. Okay. Those are the questions I had. I have a comment, but I'll wait until the appropriate time.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
No. All right.
Okay. Go ahead. My comment is I understand what you're trying to do, but I think it's very important that we do competitive solicitation unless we've exhausted every other method possible to retain information you think would be confidential. For those reasons, I'll be voting no for this, but understand what you're trying to do.
And I appreciate that you understand that it's the sole reason for doing this is trying to protect the port's assets. But I do appreciate your perspective, and we do try to follow the competitive guidelines to the letter in all circumstances. This we're just seeing as an exception for security purposes. But I do understand your perspective.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thank you. That brings me to a comment. As much as I agree with Commissioner McCarthy with regards to competitive bidding, I think we're in an era right now with cybersecurity and with all of the people trying to get into what we do. And you mentioned the Port of Seattle and what they had to go through. I think any way we can do this to ensure the safeguards of the port, and this may be an avenue that could do this. So that way, that's why I'll be supporting this.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Ng?
So who reviews the process of the exemptions besides you?
The contracts director, Sharon Rothwell. Again, this is a procurement policy. It's not an IT policy. They manage the process here, and they would be making sure that we're staying well inside the lines.
Okay. You go get them, Sharon.
Commissioner Any Marzano, other questions or comments?
Yes, I'm sorry. And one other thing I could offer, if there's commission interest too, is I didn't put this in the draft, but it would be easy to insert as a requirement to provide, like we do in other areas, a report up to the commission regarding the number of these contracts that are awarded and to whom and in what amounts at some regular interval annually.
Yeah, we'd like that.
Sure. Put that in the final version of the master policy resolution, if that's okay, Martin. And then okay. I'll just capture that amendment when I get into the next presentation for you, so you don't have to do that on the fly.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions with regard to this resolution? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you very much. Back to you.
Okay, so last but not least, we have your master policy directive. So this is not an unusual one. This is one that you see every year. In terms of the revisions that were made, we made kind of generalized corrections and updates to statutory and internal references. Where such changes that were made at the Seaport Alliance were changes were made to the Seaport Alliance version of this, which were adopted at your January managing members meeting. We made changes that, to the extent those were applicable, also to the Port of Tacoma. And then made various other changes that I've got summarized on the slides, and then your packet and materials included a more detailed red line. So we added certain definitions. We added provisions that to implement the small works roster resolution, which you've previously adopted. Added a reference to the exemption, which you just approved for competitive bidding, and updated other terminology. It's in that section that I would add this reporting requirement that we just discussed for reporting the use of the cybersecurity exemption. Financial activities policies, we changed the surplus authority has changed over the years, and it used to be tied to a provision in statute, which then got modified, and now it adjusts annually. So rather than have to come in and calculate that number every year and adjust it out of sequence with the statute, we've revised it just to reference that statute, so we don't have to change that every year. That's the biggest one. And then added a provision allowing for the establishment of certain administrative fees as allowed by law. And we made some clarifying edits to your mitigation credit policies to reflect a new type of credit that's available for conservation credits that you're getting out of the shoreline restoration being performed at your Maritime Center project. So those are the overview of the changes. It looks like a lot of red line, but there's a lot of small changes that are generally changes to numbers, terminology, and things of that nature. The big policy level changes are all captured in the two prior resolutions that we that you have already adopted. So with that, you've already done items 1 and 2 on this list, Commissioner Marzano. Thank you. So the last one is to approve Resolution 2026-04-PT, which is your master policy directive. And then I would suggest just with the amendment to add an annual reporting requirement for your cybersecurity exemption.
Right. Thank you. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Ng, second by Commissioner Wilcox. Questions or comments? Go ahead, Commissioner Ng.
This is more of a request. Just to get the updated amount of credits that we do have and specified their value, as well as, I guess, that short memo that discussed our use of credits and what's allowable in terms of sale and trade. I know Jason has it.
Jason's out there.
But I just wanted to put that out there in public so that all commissioners can have a copy of that as well.
We got more credit out of we got more credit for the Maritime Center shoreline work than we were expecting. Good news.
Good.
And so we're capturing that in this.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Heather, for your work on this. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Okay. Item E, parcel 137 EPA cleanup grant authorization, and I see Melissa coming up.
This is a request for accepting a grant, which is always a great presentation, and I will note for the record, this is Melissa's first presentation to the commission. So be nice to her.
Okay. Thank you, Eric.
You have a fan out there.
I know.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Melissa Keegans, I'm environmental project manager at the Port Tacoma. Today I'll be presenting the parcel 132 EPA grant acceptance authorization request. Today I'm here for one action, and it's to request authorization to enter an agreement with the EPA for $2 million for environmental cleanup at parcel 132. Quick synopsis on this project here. We've been awarded a $2 million EPA brownfields cleanup grant. At this stage, we're only seeking grant acceptance. Preliminary design will move forward under executive authorization, and staff will return to commission to request approval before beginning the next phase. The site is shown here. Let's see if I can use the laser. Okay, I cannot. It's the parcel there. It's currently used for construction staging for the Maritime Center. It's also the parking lot, so if you visited this property here, you probably parked there. This grant will support the future cleanup project, which involves remediating both parcel 132 and the adjacent triangular portion of parcel 94. The total project cost is estimated at $4.6 million. The $2 million grant will fund the parcel 132 portion of the cleanup. Specifically, it will fund design and construction. I have to say these are feasibility study level cost estimates, so they will be refined during design. Additionally, as part of this grant agreement, the port will contribute $1 million towards project management, community engagement, and construction contingency. Some more background here. I wanted to show this graphic that shows the Wheeler Osgood waterway area. Just to show how parcel 132 fits in the overall vision here. The blue parcels are port owned, so we have parcel 132 in the top right corner there, and then parcel 92 across the waterway. The orange parcels are not owned by the port. But I want to show that parcel 132 is at the end of the 11th Street Bridge there and right at the entrance of our Maritime Center, so it's an important piece. Some environmental background on the parcel itself. The port purchased this property in 2023 to support redevelopment in the area. That's historically used for lumber mill operation, lumber warehousing, and lumber retail, and most recently used for heavy equipment storage. Prior to purchasing the property, environmental assessments were completed by the port, and analytical results confirmed presence of contamination in soil and groundwater. Back to the grant here. To apply for the grant, we were required to have a selected cleanup plan. To support this, we used funds from a previously awarded EPA Brownfields community-wide assessment grant to develop an analysis of Brownfields cleanup alternatives document. This helped us plan and evaluate cleanup options in advance. Three alternatives were considered. They're shown here, but ultimately the recommended alternative is alternative three, which is excavation with off-site disposal. This cleanup provides the highest degree of effectiveness and permanence. This is also the remedy we used when applying for the grant, so therefore this is the remedy the port is expected to implement using these grant funds. Alternatives considered for this action, alternative one, do nothing, two, accept this grant. Staff recommend that we choose alternative two, accept this grant. Again, our action requested today, we'd like to request authorization to enter into a grant agreement with the United States Environmental Protection Agency for $2 million for environmental cleanup at parcel 132.
Thank you. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Keller, second by Commissioner McCarthy. Questions or comments? I look to my left, I look to my right. Commissioner McCarthy.
Always in favor of accepting money. So, but my question for you is, you know, when we just acquired this property a couple of years ago.
Yes, 2023.
And I know we had discussion then about what, if any, cleanup. And it didn't seem to me, I don't recall seeing numbers this big when we bought it as to what it was going to cost to clean. And this probably predates your involvement, so someone else might have to answer that. But
here comes Mr. Healy.
I see a friend. Sir.
Here comes Rob. Save me.
For the record, Rob Healy, Director of Remediation and Water Quality, Port of Tacoma. And you know, at the time we purchased the property, we did phase one and phase two before getting recommendations. And we didn't have an understanding what the cleanup was going to be, so it was an unknown at the time. I think I probably threw out a number, but I was wrong at the time.
Okay. Did we indemnify or hold harmless the people that we bought the property from?
No, we have a purchase and sale agreement. We purchase it from a trust, and they had some insurance, which we have not explored fully yet. So
yeah, I see.
There will be some cost recovery analysis that we will be doing in the future. We haven't done it yet, but we will be.
Okay, and then my third question, the cleanup cost, how much of that is related to the one parcel? Is it all parcel 132, or is it?
The 4.6 million is for both parcel 132 and the triangle. I think it's at 3.5 for parcel 132, and the rest is for the triangle.
How much is the?
3.5. So.
For the triangle. Yeah. That's what I was, the triangle's a lot more.
The triangle, I can't do the math.
Yeah. No, sorry. Parcel 132 is about three and a half million, and the triangle is a little over a million.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Dave Myers is up next. Remediation project authorization.
As Dave's on his way up, I want to point out an interesting thing.
Go ahead.
We these parcels get numbered in the order that we buy them. That's so parcel 132 is the 132nd property that we bought. That's how they get their numbers. That's the most recent one. You're not going to hear a presentation on parcel one. So these are the bookends
there
of the Port's real estate portfolio.
I had no idea where he was going with that. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm here today to request an increase in authorization for an amount of $2,500,000 for a total authorized amount of $3,700,000 for the work associated with the Early Business Center, parcel 1B. Interim cleanup action, El Napal source and UST removal project, master identification number 101287.04. In 2013, the port entered into an agreed order with the Department of Ecology. It's an agreed order DE9553, as you see here. And in August of 2023, the commission approved an amendment which allowed us to complete interim actions to do cleanup ahead of the final cleanup. Today's request is associated with one of those interim actions, the El Napal source and UST removal. The scope of work associated with this request is to complete the design, permitting, and bidding, as well as the construction and closeout reporting. It is our intention to begin this work to get out to bid around April 1st. We're hoping to be complete by mid-September so that we can avoid the fall rains. And then it's expected that the closeout and completion reporting will take about 6 months after that. So we should be done with this interim action around the end of March of 2027. The interim action for the El Napal source and UST removal is estimated at $3.7 million. The 2026 to 2023 capital investment plan authorizes $9 million. That also includes the Blair waterway cleanup cost. This project is eligible for MUTCA Ecology Remediation Action Grants. It's a 50% match, so we are anticipating that we'll recover $1,850,000 from Ecology for doing this work. Little financial table where we're at today. So far, we have spent about $866,000 on the design and additional sampling and stuff to determine the extent of the contamination. We did consider a couple of alternatives. We could wait and do all of this work as part of the cleanup action, or we can do the interim action and remove this material now. We opted to move forward with alternative number two, which is the interim action. Gets contamination out of the ground sooner and hopefully at a lesser cost. Some of the environmental impacts you can see here, we do have most of the permitting complete. We do have a meeting with the city of Tacoma next week to get their comments on the project. We're not anticipating too much there, but we do have all the other permits. And obviously completing this gets the contamination off of port property and an appropriate landfill for disposal. So with that, I'd like to request an increase in the project authorization in the amount of $2,500,000 for a total authorized amount of $3,700,000 for the work associated with the Early Business Center Parcel 1B Interim Cleanup Action LNAPL Source and UST Removals Project, Master Identification Number 101287.04.
Thank you, David. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Motion moved by Commissioner Eng, second by Commissioner Keller. Questions or comments? Commissioner Keller.
I'm really happy to see this project moving along because this is just the first step in getting that early business center moving and going. So thank you very much for this.
One quick question, David. You mentioned the fact that we could wait and do nothing. When was the time or only time that we've waited on environmental cleanup and it was cheaper?
Right.
I don't believe that was. Okay. Seeing no other comments or questions, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
We are now at special order of business. Is there any new business? No committee reports. Announcements, Eric, from you? Anything?
Mr. President, I only have one thing to say. Unfortunately, this is Tony Warfield's last meeting. He really is retiring at the end of this month. I think he's stuck out the door. But I could not keep him any longer. And so that was his swan song. And I just wanted to just note that for the record. So.
Well, there was no doubt he was is a valuable asset to the port, and he will be missed by a lot of us, that's for sure. With that, Commissioner comments. I'll start with Commissioner Keller.
Thank you. I want to give very heartfelt gratefulness to Ms. Lisa Carter, our interim executive assistant. She stepped into 18-year shoes with Judy DeRemus being gone, and I know that she had team members of Helen Hickman and Elisa Proskovich who helped her along the way too, but you did a fabulous job, again, stepping into large shoes, and really appreciate everything that you've done.
Hear, hear. Any other comments, Commissioner Eng?
I guess we'll do some thanks. I did want to thank Rod Kuhn and our community outreach, Leslie and Katie, and Government Affairs, Alice McDaniel. I'm still trying to get used to the new people. But the Ports and Popcorn, as well as a lot of our outreach. Sometimes people wonder about how the port can publicly engage. And I tell people it's not always at our monthly meetings. Because who, no offense to you because y'all work here, but who wants to come see us every 12 p.m. monthly? Not even my own mother comes here and watches this. You know, so I think I tell them, you know what? Name a time and date, I will go there. You can, you know, ask all the questions. But the best time is to actually do the ports and popcorn, the boat, the bus. Ask us all the questions you want. Engage with us. Tell us what you want to see. Because I tell people, it's good that we have people out there like Leslie and Katie and Government Affairs to actually go where you are. Either your neighborhood council or something exciting like the Grand Cinema, because that room was pretty packed. I saw Lisa there. I saw a lot of people excited for the Port of Tacoma. And I think this is the best way that we can do public engagement is out there, not just here. Of course, everyone's always welcome here. But I think that is part of our work is to the message of the port out there. So thank you so much.
Any other comments from commissioners? Matt? No? Commissioner, go ahead.
Well, I would like to echo my colleague in thanking Lisa, and in particular, Lisa, thank you for all of your patience with me. It's not easy when you're taking on a new ignorant member. That's what you had to do. So thanks. I would like to say one other thing too. I appreciate the presentation on the habitat enhancements that we're doing, and having spent a lot of time in the saltwater, in the precise area that Barrier Island is going, I'm excited to see what that is going to add to the environment there. The last few years that I spent in the legislature, I got very interested in salmon recovery. And one of the things that becomes apparent is that as part of salmon recovery, we have a predator problem. And I would just ask that we think hard about what we do that affects both, you know, the built environment and the more natural environment. Whenever we can promote habitat that is good for salmon and at the same time make it a little less attractive for predators, that would be a positive thing, I think, for people that are interested in salmon.
Very good. I'll just leave with you. I also want to thank Lisa for contacting me so many times and telling me what I need to do, and I appreciate that. I really, really do. And the last thing I want to thank staff as always, but March is a favorite month of mine because it's March Madness. And it's followed by April, which means it's baseball season. So with that, we are now at, I want to say, 1:35, and we stand adjourned. Wish you all the best.